Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
There he is.
Who's where?
Who's where? Who what? Who's show? Who's what?
You. You.
Like joints. Eating a chicken wing.
No, I wish I had leftover Chinese. I got to get through that first.
Oh, what kind of Chinese? What did you get?
Chicken and broccoli. It's delicious.
Ooh, all right.
It was my celebratory food when I was COVID clear. And I forgot.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Tim, are you testing negative yet?
Yes, as of today.
Yay.
Ooh, we all did it. Hooray.
Everyone's alive! And we can still take
it,
I hope.
So half of us have had COVID.
Relatively recently, too.
I'm sorry. All
of you. The Cool Kids Club.
So I mean, me, Chris, and Aki are still safe. Chris, you haven't had it, have you?
No, I've never had it. Nope.
In fact, because I've had like some... stuff lately, I've like did a test for the first time ever tonight, and it came up negative, so
that's good.
Good.
You have your live show coming up though, right?
No, that has come and gone.
Oh, how'd that go?
Oh, in that case, you are officially a superstar, sir, because I'm almost positive. Yeah, that's where I got it. I got it from a live show, so.
Someone at the show did get it, so yeah, I'm very lucky.
Oh, yeah. Like the
we don't know that they got it at the show, but one of my friends tested positive.
Oh,
that
geez. I
actually been in pretty close proximity to that whole time, but I always wear my mask, so
nice.
It's hard.
Very good.
I mean, kids wear your masks.
I still wear mine.
Mm-hmm. Like the thing about like when I caught it, like the reason one of the reasons why I thought that the Saturday show was a food poisoning thing instead of COVID is the fact that the Sunday before I went home.
We started, by the way. I'm Joe. This is the crew. Go ahead. Sorry.
On the way, I spent most of the Sunday in the car with my one friend as we were driving around different areas of the city and eventually going to the arcade. And then he dropped me off at the airport. And the whole time we were in the car together, since we both thought we were COVID clear, we weren't wearing masks in that car. And he didn't get it. So
that's because he's better.
Hey, wow. Hey. Just because COVID likes me more, okay? That makes me better. Makes me succulent. No.
I mean, really, we're COVID's like sloppy 60ths at this point. Like, it's 2022. It's been through a lot of the pop. Like, a friend of mine right now is getting it for her third fucking time.
Oh, man.
So, like, and that was my first, and it was real fucking easy.
Does your friend work in a hospital or something?
I think it's just hanging around with dirty hippies.
I'll be blunt. I don't think the vaccine is doing like we thought it was. Well, not thought, but I don't think it's doing like we say anymore. Because, I mean, like, it's been. Like, when was the last time you got a booster shot? Like, anybody in this chat?
I've never had one.
I think that you're vaxxed and boosted and you're alive right now says a lot.
No. Don't get me wrong. I'm not dismissing effectiveness of vaccinations. What I'm saying is they have a lifespan of max or decent effectiveness. Well, and the last time I had a booster was in November.
There's one that's completely resistant now.
Mine,
if you get vaccinated, you'll be effective for the rest of your life effective.
My last booster was also in November, but my family who live in the house, neither of them got it, but their boosters were more recent because my child got his at the end of May and my wife got her fourth shot in fucking March or April or some shit. So neither of them got it. It was just me.
They're still going strong.
But the reaction I had to COVID itself was so mild, I almost didn't know I had it.
Yay for boosters.
Yeah, exactly. My reaction to the shots 2 and 3 was like way more significant than it was to COVID, and I'll take that. Cause
too bad COVID's probably still going to kill us all because now there's a new drug resistant strain of it.
Oh yeah, I mean like
it's, hey, optimism. It's, Woo!
we're all going to die. Great.
It's going to kill us all because the people that could, you know, make a difference in you know, stopping it. Yeah. Like they're moving slowly towards pretending like it's completely over.
Like, well, at this
slowly
point,
moving, they're like sprinting towards that direction.
No, it's been happening over the course of the last year.
No.
Yeah.
No, at this rate, it's not even them anymore. They were the cause of the issue, but now the issue has spiraled on. You don't get the drug resistant versions of it from people who have who've never taken the vaccine. No, it's those people had it fucking mutate and got into and the mutated strains got into the vaccinated people, and now it's changed to be more and more drug resistant. Yeah. So now we're all fucked. Was their fault originally. Now it's just people exist is the problem.
Well, I mean, that's the nature of any virus in the concept of vaccinations anyway. Like, it's a moving target. If you miss the very narrow windows available to pretty much nuke it, which, let's be honest, there's very few instances in our society where we've pulled that shit off. But if you miss that narrow window where you can shut it down, they always mutate and they always have to constantly rebuff the thing and retool and tweak. So none of that surprises me. It's just the fact that...
You really would think that they'd have, you know, hit that window for something that destroys your fucking lungs permanently for the rest of your life.
Well, they can't because they nail the window. Everyone has to contribute. We already know.
Yeah, we had to keep the economy going, guys.
Keep the economy going. And that's the window. When people were like, fuck it, you don't tell me what to do, or I'm going to shop anyway, that's what happens. Then you get the people who get shots, the people who don't get shots, and you get a vaccine, you get a virus that spreads and does what it does, as they do. And that's when you lost the window. Because like Tim was saying, that first 2 weeks, or even, I'm not even going to go to 2 weeks, the first fucking week was like the only shot you really had, and people weren't having it. You know, they didn't
could have been. Yeah, more could have been done, but there's no sense.
I fully
relitigating agree. The failures of 2 years ago, which are significant and well-documented.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
100%.
I'm fine with the corporal concept of remove the people that are a problem and be done with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But people don't like my way of doing things.
Well, so your way involves violence and...
Violence is the answer. Clearly, I'm
not planet, which means the planet will survive, but I'm not one with the planet, so not until I'm fertilizer. So that's why I don't get down with your line of thought. But I'm not dismissing it. I just don't want it because I get it. I want to not. I want to move on and do more shit. You know. So also Chinese is fucking good.
Congratulations, man! I'm happy to hear that. That's badass.
Thank you. And I'm also
is it like a fried chicken game. Or are we like a grilled chicken?
Oh, have you ever heard of banchan?
What?
Huh?
No, I have not.
Banchan is a line of chicken, Korean fried chicken, and the whole premise, I'm sure other lines do it. It's not exclusive to banchan, but they double fry their chicken. So they season it, they fry it, they roll it in sauce, they fry it again, and they re-roll it in the sauce. And it creates a really nice, delicious crunch when you eat it, and it's also very well flavored. Awesome. It's really good stuff.
Okay, like, so this is like that with broccoli or what?
I have that chicken, but it's in the fridge right now. I'm eating actual Chinese leftovers.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
This is typical chicken and broccoli, but from my favorite Chinese joint.
Chris, what are you eating?
I'm not eating a thing.
Oh well, that takes the fun out of it.
Come on, Chris. We're going to drop the ball. We're trying to have a show over here.
I'm
chewing on the tip of a pin over here. Give me something.
Chris, how far did you get into the top 100? How far did you move on?
We are now two games down, 98 to go.
Nice.
Just finished Legend of Zelda Link to the Past last night.
Congrats. How was that? I saw you posting about that. I couldn't make the chat.
It was good. Got 100%. Only got lost a couple times.
Wow.
Only flung myself out of a dungeon on purpose. Huh?
100% of it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Could I guess, on the dungeon you got lost in?
Oh, Turtle Rock.
Was it Turtle Rock?
Well, it was Turtle Rock. Well, in Turtle Rock, so there's this thing where, you know, you have to use the brief moment of that dungeon that's outside to put yourself back in the light world, and then go inside this cave that appears and get the final, well, not final, but, you know, the a quarter heart that was the final one for me in order to have all the hearts. And I forgot which one it was out of three, and so I accidentally flung myself off of the dungeon and had to restart it. twice.
Guess that the dungeon that gave you problems was the one with Blind the Thief? Because when I look back on it,
I remember that being
the thing that gave me the most... It's like, I think the problem is, like, the thing that gave me the most problems with that dungeon was the revelation of how to treat it back in the day. You know, to get the boss to show up, but as an adult, I feel like it just never left my memory. But I wonder if that's true for pretty much everybody. Like, I've done it once, I'll never forget that, because that's really cool.
It's a very memorable dungeon.
Yeah, I always get a little lost in that one, and the Lost Forest, you know, the forest dungeon, the third one. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm able to, like, I've played the game so many times, it's like, I've played it, I've probably beaten the game, like, I'd say, like, maybe 10 times by now, which is not a huge number considering the game's 30 years old this year. But
My back hurts.
But yeah, it's like, it's kind of like I've played through it enough that it's like, but there's enough space in between where I do forget the stuff, but I can kind of, like, I sort of am able to feel it out intuitively now, because it's like I've done it correctly enough times. Yeah, so it's kind of like it's this weird mix of, like, forgetting it but also remembering it but not knowing it, like, not knowing I remembered it. I just go in a direction and it's the right direction.
Yeah, there's muscle. Like, when I replayed the original Legend of Zelda, this was, I don't know, a few years back, like, I weirdly was just like, I think I have to bomb this wall. And I did have to bomb that wall. It was really strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like your brain just kind of knows certain things.
Yeah. There's some, something lingers there.
It's like our brains retain knowledge or something like that. I don't know.
It's weird.
Well, it's the type of knowledge. I mean, for... I get so much shit, but The Simpsons and where to bomb in Zelda? Sign me up.
I remember The Simpsons in the 90s. I don't know the other Simpsons.
That's the only Simpsons that matters.
Yeah, that's what I've always thought.
Same topic, mind you, but where does Super Metroid fall on the list?
It is, actually, I misspoke last time when I answered that, because I said it was number 5, but it is number 6. Number 5 is Super Mario Brothers 3.
When you get to Super Metroid, if I haven't started already, let me know, because I've been having this, between Amanda Lepree and Rob... Getting back into the game, I officially have had a craving to revisit it, because I haven't played it since the 90s, and I'm wondering how my brain will take to it.
My best guesstimate is that it's going to be about this time next month, because this next Monday, I have something to do this weekend, so my next stream is Monday, where I'll be playing both Tetris on the Game Boy, which is number 3, for which I actually dug out my Tetris instruction book, so I have the instruction book to Tetris now.
Finally, you know how to play it.
Yeah, now I'll figure out how to play it. And, and number 4 is Mario Kart 64, which, of course, we wouldn't agree with now, but in 1997, it was only like a couple months old at that time, so people were still very hype about it.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
I'll be honest with you. I thought the battle mode is still pretty hard.
Are you still on speakerphone? Yeah. You keep getting garbled.
No.
I'll take that.
No.
Sheepish no.
But yeah, so I'm going to be playing through Tetris. I'm going to play some Tetris. Like, obviously, there's only one way to kind of win it. And I'll be doing that, which will take me about... It took me 10 minutes when I booted it up. Like over level the weekend 20? To try again, defeating mode B stage 9-5. Because if you do endless, yeah, I think you can get to level 20, but I sure can't, and I don't have. But yeah, if you beat 9-5 on mode B, then you get a congratulations screen, and I'm like, that's good enough.
Yeah,
I mean, if you could beat 9-5, that's impressive. The way it is, that's not an easy game with the old rules of Tetris.
Yeah, spoilers. I already did a couple of times now, so because I was like, well, let's see how good I am still at this game. So yeah, I can do it. Nice. It'll just take. I assume it'll take me about an hour or so, and then I'm gonna play through Mario Kart 64, which might take the rest of the. Well, it'll take the rest of the night for sure on Monday.
Are you doing and
then
I all might courses in Mario 64?
Yes, I'm gonna try and at least beat the 150 CCs. Maybe not reverse mode, but it depends on which one will get me like a nice ending credits type scene. I don't remember which one it is.
Are you doing 50s, 100s, and 150s, or just 150s?
Well, I've been thinking about that. I feel like I should go through the whole gamut because that's, you know, because the others have to be unlocked, right? Or do they not? I don't know. I'll figure it out.
I feel like only Mario Classics before that.
Like, it's like two things. Like, one, I still think the battle mode in that game is really good because of block port, which I don't think ever really got a port. But then secondly, I still have these nostalgic memories of like how the N64 could not particularly handle that game in its entirety if you had four players. Like they had to cut the music out for four player matches.
Yes.
But I always found that amazingly. Wow. I actually had moments where I did not want to play with my friends because like we don't have the music. What the hell's the point?
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, they had to cut some corners to get four player on that thing.
I think I've only ever played it two player.
Yeah,
that's pretty much where you cone it.
I was sheltered as a child. I didn't have a lot of friends.
But what you're saying is you had N64 music. You had music in your Mario Kart.
Are you still sheltered?
Yes,
it's just your personality.
Very sheltered.
Mm.
I stay indoors a lot.
Well, so next Monday, that'll be Tetris and Mario Kart 64. Mario Kart 64 might go into next week. But then after that is number 5, which is Super Mario Brothers 3, which I typically get 100. I can do 100% run in that game in about 3 hours.
Not bad.
So you'll collect all the whistles, but not use them.
Yeah, I don't collect the whistles because I don't want this. I want the space in my inventory. So I intentionally skip them. I just mean 100% of the stages, like even playing the ones that you can skip, like because it's just an alternate course. So yeah, that I definitely can beat all three of those games pretty quickly. So I think that'll take like another 3 weeks after this upcoming Monday, and then we'll be starting Super Metroid. But I'll let you know again when we get closer to it.
Sweet. Keep me in the loop.
Huh? Well, what'd you say, Joe?
I said, sweet. Is there anything anyone else wanted to talk about, or should we dive into reviews?
I got nothing.
I've been spaced out this entire time. So.
Good job, Aki.
Yep.
Well, you're not supposed to be here anyway, but you're here for a little bit.
She's usually not awake on Tuesdays. Yeah.
She's usually hibernating and putting together Gundam models.
I respect that. Or only
that sounds awesome.
Putting together Gundam models and
Gundam model in like over a month. Oh, I'm so depressed.
So you're putting together Gundam models in anticipation of winter?
Who doesn't?
Yeah. You just stuff them in your cheeks.
Do that.
Stuff them in your cheeks.
Actually,
picture this image.
If I may be pedantic for a second, if Aki is sleeping all Tuesday, that would not be hibernating, it would be estivating. Because estivating is sleeping all through the summer season, and hibernating is sleeping all through the winter season.
I'm just disturbed because you telling me that is why I now understand the title of that freaking Senran Kagura game, which is called Estival Versus. I was like, why is it called Estival? What is an Estival? There you go.
It has to do with summer.
Yep, I never knew. And you said that. I'm like, there it is.
And
I want to estivate, but humans do that, and that makes me sad.
I think that it even has to do with like why we have Easter, you know?
Because we have Easter because of Falcom.
Oh right, yeah.
But up, up, but up, up.
That's something to do with Jesus.
I didn't hear you, man, and you cut out for me, so I didn't hear the joke.
It wasn't that good anyway.
It's okay.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't remember laughing at anything, so.
Hey, it was a fantastic joke. Don't let them dissuade you. Listen to that playback.
So, Tim, are you ready to talk about a game?
Yeah, I could.
All right. First game to talk.
Really quick. Okay, really quick. I'm joining by phone today. I wanted to say hi to the Twitch chat because I can't join. I didn't realize I would be interrupting y'all to say that, though. Sorry, I should have waited.
No, that's fine.
No, I didn't realize how awkward I was about to make it, but here we are.
Oh, it's fine. You're cute Harden. Enough Harden. That it's okay. Interrupt us all you want. It's okay.
Oh, my God. Aki is talking to me vocally and not just in the Twitch chat, so I can't just be like, LOL, blush.
I mean, you can still save that. That'd be hilarious.
Save it up. Who's in the Twitch chat? Tell me who's in there. Is Carnage in there? Yep. Is Lloyd in there?
I don't see Lloyd yet. Thimber's in there. We've got Dino Rhino in there. Carnage is in there. I saw Root Beer in there.
What about BX Latin Beats?
Latino's not here yet. No.
All right. Thimber
usually doesn't come until a bit later. So.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, Latino Heat likes coming in closer to the music. Latino Heat likes the music.
Oh, hell yeah.
He's bringing it Latino Heat.
Viva La Raza. Tim, you ready to talk about a game?
Yes.
Wait, we got it.
God damn it.
All right.
First game to talk about tonight is called Spider Source, developed and published by WayForward, released July 14th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. The nightmarish dinosaur-spider hybrids known as Spider Source have run amok. Armed with an arsenal of awesome weapons, it's up to you and a friend in co-op mode to shoot your way through six levels of ferocious run-and-gun mayhem and send those mutant monstrosities back to the Stone Age. Tim, tell us about your time with Spider Source.
This game is I wonder if I'm gonna start saying this more often. I didn't realize this game was on Apple Arcade. Remember Apple Arcade? Remember that?
No.
Was it where you go to Bob for apples?
I do remember Apple Arcade.
It was Apple's like subscription. Apparently, I guess I shouldn't say was, it still exists. It's Apple's like subscription game service on iOS.
It's all premium games that don't have any microtransactions.
Yeah.
It sounds great.
We've seen a handful of them come over to the Switch. This seems like one of the bigger ones coming to all consoles. Its exclusivity deal ended with Apple.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that to happen with that Final Fantasy game that they made. Anyways, fucking Spider Source. So yeah, this is a game about there's like a whole plot, well, a backstory, I guess I should say, going on with how like there's like a global food shortage, and this company has decided to fill that void by making hybrid spider dinosaurs because they'll have more drumsticks. That is the gist of it. I'm not kidding, because you know, more legs, more drumsticks, more juicy food for the people. So yeah, you're fighting like these like bug dinosaur hybrid deals throughout the game. Basically, like you're at the lab of the company, and there's a big spider sore breakout, and like these two characters, this punk rock girl and some like dopey athlete guy, come walking in to be interns, and all the other interns applying for the position die. So you're hired. And you get sent to kind of like, you know, clean things up, clean up this outbreak of spider sores in the lab by way of shooting them, doing some rooting, tooting and shooting. Yeah, so this is a run and gun game allegedly made by some of the folks that made Contra 4, which was a game on the Nintendo DS like in 2007, which is what made me go like, really? That whole team was just kind of sitting around there still? Maybe, sure. I don't know. I'll take your word for it. Wait for it.
Team, though.
Yeah, there's still some people around there that worked on it, I'm sure. So you get in the game, there's two playable characters. They are different from one another in more than just appearance, as I'll get into. So you're going through this level. It is definitely, you feel the Contra vibe in the running and the platforming. Feels like a little bit not as snappy as a Contra game, but you know, that's the gist. You're running from left to right and then kind of jumping up corridors, and you can jump down through certain platforms. There will be power-ups that will come fluttering through the air, and you shoot them and collect them. And there's about like a half dozen different guns to pick up. And if you pick up two of the same gun, it will give you a better version of that gun. You can carry two different weapons at the same time and flip flop between them. And if you die, you lose that weapon. So in very contra fashion, when I have, well, this game actually has, you can take three hits and not just die in one hit. So kudos for that. But it's like when I'm about to die, I'm like, okay, I'm going to switch to the weapon I least want to keep. So that it flies out of my hands and I still have my good gun for when I have full health. But it's, you know, you can build a loadout. You can find your two preferred guns to deal with situations, that you so choose. And there's also, there's one power up. This is kind of interesting. You can opt to carry just one gun, and your secondary weapon, throwing up the air quotes, will actually be a shield that will take, well, on the girl I played the most, it would take like one bullet of damage and then go away. And then it would like regenerate a few seconds later. So it kind of gave you like a little bit of a momentary, it's something to keep you alive. You could take a hit and then move on. Some hits, just like projectiles, but it was a cool thing. It was like, okay, I could sacrifice firepower for some defense. But the two characters, actually, the weapons are different between them. Like, it's this, you know, you'll see the same power-up icon, but the actual weapon that you get will be slightly different, which is kind of cool. Like, the girl gets the kind of traditional Contra spread shot weapon, but the dude gets his version of the spread shot shoots out a ball that, like, bounces apart when it hits something and then sends balls bouncing around, you know, the screen. So it's, you know, thematically similar, but functionally different. And it's interesting because I found that like guns that I didn't like with one character, I liked the way that they acted more with the other character. So it's worth checking out both of them, and playing around with both of them. So as you play through the game, there are, the aforementioned six levels. After you beat a level or beat a giant mutated spider Thor boss, you will get a new ability for your character, which includes being able to hang onto walls and ceilings, the coveted double jump, the ability to shoot webs out of your ass, which basically acts like a grappling hook claw, which was something that was in Contra 4, because Contra 4 was like a two vertical screens on the DS. So that was a way to have vertical mobility in that game, and they have it in this game, and it's useful. And like a horizontal, well, there's a ground pound and there's a horizontal dash. I do wish you got that horizontal dash sooner, because like the game instantly felt more fun as soon as I got that thing, because your character's lateral movement is kind of on the slow side, just felt a little bit sluggish, but felt better once I got that dash to dash around. So yeah, you go through six levels. There are three different difficulty settings. For some reason, the easiest difficulty is called well done. And like, I mean, like a well done piece of meat is generally tough. Like, in my estimate, right? Like, I'm not crazy here. Like, that's the hardest thing to bite into, yet somehow it is the easiest difficulty. I feel like they did this, like, upside down. But whatever.
I think it's like tough men eat raw meat.
Yeah, okay. I'll take it. Yeah. And if you have your steak well done, you're just
you're probably dipping garbage. It in ketchup.
You are just the worst. And so you need the game on the easiest difficulty, obviously. But medium is still medium at the end of the day. I actually did run through it on well done, despite my aversion to the very concept of its existence. First, just to kind of see the game. And I actually thought it was kind of dull. It wasn't until I like bumped up the difficulty and suddenly there was like more enemies on the screen. And like, I felt like more active in the stages. I was like, okay, wait, this is like quite a bit of fun. So there's a story mode, and once you clear the story mode, and the story mode has like little cutscenes and dialogue between the levels, as you're talking to your superiors at the company, you will unlock an arcade mode and a speedrun mode. So in the arcade mode, you play straight through all the levels. You have a limited number of lives that carry over from level to level. In story mode, they kind of like, you get certain number of lives for each level, and this, like, it carries over. So it's more like a classic run and gun game, but you still have the same progression of unlocking the abilities. So what I actually found is the speedrun mode was the most fun because it just gives you all the abilities up front and it's just like, go to town, get through the game as fast as possible. And like, I'm not a speedrunner man, but you don't have to play that mode for speed. I just thought it was more fun to play from the beginning with all the abilities unlocked. yeah. So yeah, the game, I'm trying to think, probably about 40 minutes for a run through, and that was not my fastest time. But you know, it's something you're going to probably run through multiple times. You can play with different characters on different, difficulties, and it does, it's not the best, like, of this style game that I've ever played. Like when I saw that it had been on Apple Arcade, that made a lot of sense. Take that little backhanded slap there, mobile games. But I could just be like, oh, okay, this makes sense with like kind of how the levels are designed and how the characters looked and everything. It has that kind of mobile feel to it. And I mentioned like the character's lateral movement felt a little bit sluggish. But you know, if you have all the abilities unlocked, that's not as much of a deal because you have that dash and you have so many more mobility options. So, you know, kind of once you get through it once and get, you know, things unlocked and you have the speedrun mode, I thought it was actually like quite a lot of fun. And probably pretty solid. Dare I say it is solid for $20.
Sitting at that $20 price tag. What is your official verdict and what are your thoughts on the price? I kind of get the feeling that it seems a bit high given its mobile roots, but I'm hoping that games like this can change our opinion of what mobile games can be.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think that's a fine price point for it. Like, yeah, sure, it could be cheaper. I mean, $15 would be like, hey, it's a good game that's cheaper than $20. Great. Yeah, it's not the best run and gun gunner game that I've ever played. Like it is no Cuphead, but it is fun and solid. And there isn't like, I don't find a ton of these games that really like scratch the itch like very well. I think it's worth checking out for fans of the genre.
Cool beans. All right. Yeah. Tim, that's it for you.
Yeah.
You going to hang around or are you going to head out?
No, I'm going to go to bed. I'm fucking tired. I did some martial arts tonight for the first time in a long time, and my body aches.
Well, we are glad that you were back.
Darn nap.
Oh, I do capoeira.
Oh, cool. And your son is in karate, right? Am I making that up?
Yes, he does karate. Yeah, no, you're not making that up. Yeah, no, I don't know. It's easier to not have someone else teach him a martial art than me. Than dad,
I feel that.
The teacher in that. But yeah, no, I've been taking capoeira for like, I've been practicing capoeira for like a long time now, since shortly after the Xbox 360 came out. What was that, 2006?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's an awesome benchmark. Oh, I have benchmarks.
Man.
Like that.
Well, it was right after I moved to Buffalo, which was right after it came out. It's the first thing that popped in my freaking mind. So yeah, you know, and I've been practicing it for that long, and there's been ups and downs because, you know, sometimes I have a lot of time for it and sometimes I do not. That do not time being mostly since I had a kid, but you know, I've been teaching it for like 10 years, and yeah, so now I'm cool. Teaching it while my kid takes karate. So good to get moving again.
Well, it was good having you back on. Yeah. We'll see you next week with some more good stuff.
Yeah, I got a string of reviews back up. I'm post vacation, post COVID, and I'm back in it.
Back at it, baby.
See y'all next week.
Night night, Tim.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is Grobot, developed by Wasabi Play, published by Ash Games. Or Wabasabi Play, published by Ash Games, released July 14th on Switch for $19.99. Grobot is a 2D point-and-click adventure about a robot saving her home from a dark crystalline force. Set upon a beautiful biopunk space station bursting with fantastic plants and aliens, you play as Nara, a Grobot in training to become a captain. When your station home is attacked by rapidly growing crystals, it's down to you to save it. Brooke, did you save it?
Not quite yet.
No.
But I'm on the case. That's Brooke good. Is on the case. Now, the first thing I want to say I really, really, really love about this game is this description we just heard from Joe. This is so vanilla, right? It's like point and click adventure game. Here's the character. Oh, some crystals are attacking. Well, we hope you can save them. So each week we're up in here basically playing like drinking games of how many times we hear the word unique used in these blurbs that Joe needs us. When devs are describing their own games, most games seem unable. If you're listening to the show, then you already know that most games seem unable to have a little eShop blurb like that without describing their game and mechanics and story and characters. Each is like unique. Then we come along to this game that isn't just a point-and-click adventure game. It has crafting, it has flower arranging, it has music making. Like, you collect little musical notes, you make little songs. It has puzzles all over the place. It's got puzzles literally inside of other puzzles that aren't even connected to the point-and-click adventure part. I love this game. I never played anything like this shit. I had a great time. So we have all these studios coming in here being like, oh, our game's so unique. Well, we have this mechanic, we have that. This is what really sets us apart. And then this game that has, like, so much more to offer than, like, I expected from any games I've gotten so far on the show just rolls in and is just like, yeah, again, it's just a point-and-click adventure. Like, that's all the information that blurb basically gives us. And I just think it's amazing. I think they're basically, like, they're slow rolling us. I'm kind of like, I have this review written out where I'm basically yelling at them for selling themselves so short, because I wouldn't be buying the game if I read that description. I'd be like, wow, that looks really cute. That's really great art style. It looks interesting, but I've played a shitload of point-and-click adventure games. I don't need another one. They're really not selling what they're doing here. It's awesome. It isn't a terribly, terribly long game. It's going to take you a good chunk of time, but you're probably not going to break 10 hours on it. I think most players will only play this game for, like, probably 6 or so hours if you're smart. Probably could couple days if you're like normal to stupid range like me. That being said, while it's not gonna contest with games like Don't Starve that you can easily dump thousands of hours into, I feel like if we're calling this game a quote-unquote point-and-click adventure, we may as well call games like Don't Starve a point-and-click adventure, because technically that's true if we get to ignore things like crafting and arranging too. And if you like the art and sound design of the Don't Starve franchise, by the way, even though this game is totally different stylistically, I think you'd be delighted by the design of this game all around. It has a sort of similar charm to it, where it's certainly highly stylized and almost a little cartoony in parts, but instantly environmentally immersive. Like, no matter what your taste and styles of game are, I think if you consider yourself a gamer, we all have games like that where, even though they're a little cartoony, some art styles just do a lot with a little. And we all have games, I think, that we've loaded up and been like, oh, wow, I'm instantly in this game. I'm instantly, like, feeling this environment, even though maybe it's something like Fez, maybe it's something like Spelunky, and it's not necessarily, like, one of those open-world games that cost $60 that you're expecting to live in for a while. I'm getting really a little sidetracked, getting off my notes here, because I did have a really good time this game. I'm surprised by how much effort, how many ideas went into the game, and how real of an environment it feels. So much going on this game. I think even though it is a shorter game that you probably won't break 10 hours on, I think for $13 to $20, depending on what system you're buying it on, this is a complete, like, totally complete enchanting experience that I'm definitely going to remember. So let me see. Scrolling around in my notes here. Give me a second. So most scenes, like, are constantly animated as you're exploring. Like, you go from room to room and location to location, like a lot of point-and-click adventures, although there's a little variation there that I won't spoil. Most scenes and screens you're looking at are constantly animated as you're exploring. Impeccably animated, by the way. Everything in this game works really well, super crazy crisp. That's always something I like to mention, specifically if I'm reviewing a game on Switch too, because this game originally came out 2020 on Steam. A lot of games we see ported to Switch work great for Switch, but a lot of them don't. So I just like to throw that in there when I notice that it's been a job well done there, that it is well released on this console. Another cool thing this game does that bucks the typical point-and-click adventure style is all of this ideas in the game, everything that works in the game, all the little machines that are built into the game that you get to mess with, they're all encapsulated in the mystical fantasy universe that the game has created to give you the game. What does that mean for you? What I'm getting at here is if you're doing things like collecting tools and fixing little broken machines like you so often do in point-and-click adventures, there's no assumption of prior knowledge here, because you're not playing as like a human in New York. Oh, it's a point-and-click adventure. You're playing as a robot on whatever the space station is called, and it's not even in our universe. We like to joke about the thing where I was in unforeseen circumstances where I'm fixing the engine with the pantyhose. This happened to me a few months ago. And, you know, I complain a lot, even though that game did it really well, that I don't know how engines work, so that part took me a few hours. I went around to town, and I just couldn't figure out what tools to put into the thing. This will happen to me a lot of point-and-click adventures, where I end up having to look something up or ask someone for how it works, because I didn't understand, like, soldering or something that I don't understand in real life. Well, there will be no fixing of engines with pantyhose or whatever in this game. And if there is, they're going to teach you what the pantyhose are. They're going to teach you what the engines are, because you've never seen any of them before. But they're going to look like they're made of magical outer space enchanted garden shit, which is the aesthetic of this game. This is me reading my notes, people. I'm realizing I wrote it down verbatim like this. But that's how I really feel. So that's wrapping a great it up description. Here. I think the aesthetic of this game is dead on. And if you Google some pictures of it, like, the art style is just insane. You're going to know instantly if you like it. And if you like the art style, like, I don't want to go off too much on a tangent here, but like I said, all the scenes and the screens are animated. So it just feels really like living and breathing. And so, like, that kind of just doubles the work on the artist's part too. So lots of love and work put into this game. Tons of budget went into the music and the sound design of this game. Lots of little ambient vocalization in addition to instrument work. The actual soundtrack and sound design is awesome and super interactive. Everything you interact with makes different cool noises, and sometimes that's part of the riddle too, because a lot of the riddles in this game, even though the game's not built around it, are auditory. A few months ago, maybe it was only a couple months ago, Chris and I reviewed a game called Sonority, and it was pretty immersive game where you would kind of learn musical notes and collect them in this world, and you would sort of play them back to unlock riddles. And as you went along, you learned more musical notes, and you sort of added to your arsenal of like what music you know and what notes you can pull out to solve different riddles that need the musical notes to be played. This game is doing that too, and it's doing it in a really magical, like, haunting, immersive way that I think is super well done. I did give that game a good review, but I think when it comes to this sort of musical sound riddle thing that this game is trying to do, I think it does it better than Sonority. I think it's cooler. I think it's more immersive. I know, like, immersive is my new unique here. I use that word like 20 times in this game, but like, it really sucked me in. I think that's super notable for a short game. And I think, like, I don't find the music making, to compare this to Sonority, I don't find Sonority to be very immersive, but I find this game to do it too. And I find it interesting that, like, it does this aspect of it so well. And so magically, although it's a little less involved music wise than what Sonority is doing and the system they built in there, that's notable to me too, because this is just one facet of the game. As opposed to with Sonority, you know, that's it. That's the whole game. Not that they didn't do a really cool job and have a cool idea. They really did. And it's not the same idea, but it's kind of the same itch that you're scratching, the same feeling. So yeah, really, really, really enjoyed this game. Has so much atmosphere. The art is gorgeous. It's like breathtaking to me. It's one of the cutest and prettiest games that I've played of this scale, hands down.
Nice. Well, the game is sitting at $19.99 on the Switch. What are your thoughts?
I think it's worth it. I think we all know I was about to give this one a buy it, but this is a snap buy it for me, even though, like, I don't know if y'all have noticed this pattern with me. When a game takes about less than 10 hours, even if it takes me like 12 hours because I play games slower, like, I don't always, like, I could really appreciate a game, but I don't know if I want to pay $20 for something that I'm going to be in for like 4 to 6 hours, unless I think it's really magical. 100 times over, this is a buy it for me. If this were a $30 game and it takes me less than 10 hours, I think they've created a piece of art here. And I think anybody who gives it a fair shot will just absolutely be enchanted by it. I definitely was. And I think it's an awesome game.
Sweet.
I'm glad you liked it as much as I did when I reviewed it.
Oh my God, that's so cool. Like, she leaves this toward the end. Ah, oh, you gotta find me the episode. I want to listen to your review now.
I have no idea. It's been a while.
I'm gonna find it. I know how to say.
I knew the company name Wabasabi Play sounded familiar. I'm like, did we cover this on Steam when it first launched? And lo and behold, we did.
Yep.
I have this biggest shit-eating grin on my face because, like, I just gushed about this, like, game for probably 10 or 15 minutes and just the whole time. Like, I don't know. Like, you and I have pretty similar tastes, but we don't always see 100% eye-to-eye on games. And it just warms my heart that you loved it, too.
It's amusing how many games that you've played and reviewed for here that I've
played it and is, reviewed for episode, here at the same time. Episode 724. It's the very,
oh my God,
the very final review on the episode.
That's so cool, man. Yeah, I thought this was a really neat game. I'm gonna hit you up on Discord and like pick your brain about it more, but I was really impressed by this one. I'm glad you had a good time too.
You are more than welcome to talk to me at any point, at any time, anywhere.
We got that recorded.
Yep. And I mean, as long as I'm awake, obviously if I'm asleep, that doesn't do you any fucking good. But, you know, right. I mean, if you want to come here
me.
And talk.
Just wake me. I will wake up for you. God damn it.
I mean, if you want to come here and talk to me in my sleep, you go right the fuck ahead. But
okay. Awesome.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Before we get any further into that, Brooke, were you going to stick around or were you heading out?
I'm taking off for the night because I'm tired of holding this phone up to my head. But thank y'all for bearing with me through my technical difficulties.
Well, hopefully we hear you back in full force next week.
Cool. I'm going to go listen to Aki's review of the game I reviewed. Good night, you guys.
I can't wait for you to just randomly jump back in here in like an hour and be like, I listened to the review. These are my thoughts.
I mean, it's fine. Right. I'm in here until damn near the end of the show, too. So.
Yeah.
So. Night, night, you guys.
Have a good one.
Later.
All right. Next up is the game Zell, developed by Tiny Roar Games, published by Assemble Entertainment, released July 14th on Switch and Steam for $18.99. Zell is a 3D action adventure set in a sci-fi fantasy setting. Play as Reed, shipwrecked on the strange world of Zell without any recollection of her former life. It's up to you to unravel her past and connection to Zell. Chris, tell us about your time with Zell, X-E-L.
Zell. Yeah, it would be weird if it was Excel. Well, Excel is a spreadsheet program that... So, Zell is the 3D isometric adventure of a lady who crashes into what seems at first like some wilderness, maybe some alien wilderness, and she wakes up with no memories of who she is, but also like still with her like personality intact, including like a sharp sense of sarcasm, etc. And she also wakes up with a cube in her head, which you know, we just have to take her word for because we don't see any evidence of that. But apparently, there's a cube in her head. So she's in a spot, and you know, you kind of walk through until you find your first person to talk to and like kind of start the story off. But it very quickly becomes apparent that when you're walking around, the wildernessiness of it kind of fades away a little bit, and you see like a lot of machinery, and then like a lot of robots, and then you pull out a laser sword and you start, you know, fighting stuff. And you're like, okay, so this is clearly not just like a alien planet of, you know, like some, you know, untouched, uncivilized place. Like this actually is some, you know, is a spacey thing. And eventually, yes, you do meet a person named Desmond who kind of guides you after you beat a boss on your own. And you also discover, or you also have like a little companion, which is basically a mix between Navi from Legend of Zelda and R2-D2, because it bleeps and bloops at you, and also shows you kind of where to go.
Does it bother you incessantly?
No, so it's...
That's what I was going to ask.
But it does fly around, and it glows blue, so, I mean, that's, you know... Thankfully, it doesn't speak English, so we're safe there. Yay. And eventually, after beating a boss that... you know, if you can, and also discovering a shield, then she also discovers a person who reveals to her that this is a space station that has apparently decades ago stopped functioning correctly, so it's no longer really moving, it's just kind of floating in space. And after circumstances, it falls on Shell to explore this place and try to save it by diverting the cooling system to the core of the space station, else it will explode. And along the way, she gets to learn about things, you know, about the world and her place in it, and meet some people, and also learn a little bit about time travel. Oh, and there's also, like, cooking and some other stuff, and crafting. So, That's the basic gist of it. A lot of it is running around in isometric 3D space, just kind of... The game is pretty slow-paced. You know, you can run around basically anywhere, and, you know, when you get to your mission, you get to your mission. You can talk to people. Some of them are voice-acted, some are not. Sometimes just Shell is voice-acted and the other person is not, so you get to hear her lines but not the person she's talking to, which is a little odd. A little odd is actually how I would describe how most things in this game work, but we'll get to that in a little bit. We're still in the good things right now. So yeah, it's all about, like, it's Zelda-esque, and they publicly say that this is a Zelda-like game, so, like, it's not like this isn't even my comparison. You know,
it's kind of in the name.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Zelda, yeah. So yeah, the combat is mostly sword and shield based, although eventually you do unlock other items, you get stuff crafted. Literally, there's a hookshot in this game. I mean, you know, there's Zelda fans will find a lot to recognize and enjoy in this. Oh, and by the way, you can pet all of the animals, including space cows that are shaped like cows but are colored like giraffes, which is pretty great.
Interesting.
There was nowhere else to really put that. That's just I had the game loaded up and I'm looking at one of these giraffe cows right now. And yeah, I found that good. But anyways, so a lot of it is like kind of exploring different parts of this space station, you know, different kind of not hubs, but like biomes, I suppose. And you know, trying to get through this major quest and, like I said, defeating little robots and stuff. The action's pretty good. It just runs on your basic 1-2-3 combo system. You can roll away from enemies, of course, because this is a modern game. You know, when bosses come up, then it's like they move around in a pattern, and you got to figure out the pattern because they'll kill you otherwise. In fact, the first boss actually was a pretty high scale of difficulty when, like, the regular enemies could barely touch me. This guy was, like, you know, shooting lasers, and you had to, like, figure out what its pattern was and how to get away from these lasers and when to block and when not to block. And, like, half the time, this, like, blocking didn't work and rolling didn't work. Like, it was shooting outside of, like, the range it was broadcasting in. Which I think that's about the time that I should get into, like, the weird stuff in this game. So, it is a 3D isometric game, like I said. The camera is completely fixed on both a certain distance, which roughly makes your character Reed look like an ant on a dinner plate. You know, your character is very small, and there's a lot of space around her that's not really, like, apart from just navigating, which, you know, you can do anyway because there's a map that you can access. It's like there doesn't seem to be a reason why she's tiny, and why the enemies are tiny, and why the people are tiny. And, like, every dude I talk to could be the guy I'm trying to find, but, you know, I don't know because I can't tell any difference between them. Like I said, I could discern that alien cows kind of look like giraffes. you know, things like that. And, like, there's no option to, like, move the camera around, which, by the way, it doesn't do the thing where it, like, makes buildings, like, transparent if they're in front of you. If something's in your way, it's just in your way.
I hate that when games do that.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, they're doing that because rotating the camera freely would cause frame rate issues. Well, guess what? This game has frame rate issues anyway. It chugs along at like a 20 to 25 FPS, you know, and it hiccups every, like, I'd say about every second and a half, 2 seconds of moving. It just kind of, you know, does like that little thing. And sometimes when you're walking around a particular place, like, part of it's not loaded in yet. And I'm like, that's the whole point of having a fixed camera isometric 3D game, is that you have to get that stuff sorted before it shows up on camera. Funny enough, you can actually, if a place isn't loaded in and you're like right up on it, you could just walk right off the whole planet and just have to restart your game.
Fun.
Yeah, so that's fun. The first time I got a game over, it soft locked the game, so I had to reset it. It just turned into a brown screen, and then it was just said nothing. I was like, is this what's supposed to happen? And I restarted the whole game, and then like next time I died, it actually showed me like the game over screen and stuff like that. Characters tend to do weird things sometimes. So sometimes characters will kind of float around the ground, not walking. They're just little figures will just kind of float across the ground like they're, you know, practicing levitation. And there was one character that was sitting down, and then it like on a box, and then when I came back a little bit later, it was like spinning on the box. And I was like, what? These are like weird glitches that people make up, like, you know, to that, whatever. there's some good and there's some bad here, basically. I really like the imagination of the game. I like the story. I like the character. She's good. Her voice actor's good. Actually, all the voice actors are good. It has good jokes. I did catch the required arrow to the knee reference, which they actually did make funny in this game, because there's a character saying like, oh, I used to be an adventurer like you until a, you know, context specific thing in this game hit me in the knee. And then Reed is like, I got that reference. And she's amnesiac, so even though she has no idea who she is, she knows the Skyrim meme.
Oh, God.
That's the joke. I like that joke. There's literally a character named Uwu, UWU, and his voice actor is trying to sound like Patrick Warburton, and it's charming. There's a lot of charm to this game. I wish that it ran faster, and I wish that like it wasn't buggy and like kind of just not super fun to play or look at, because again, I would like to zoom in on my character a little bit. I mean, this is like, I would say my character model is about half the size that you'd see in Diablo, you know, like it's hard to overstate just how tiny this character is, and just forget about trying to read text on like the Switch screen.
Yeah.
Or see anything. So,
well, perhaps like, it performs better on Steam. It did release on maybe. Steam and Switch. We could just hope that performance is better on Steam, but the game is sitting at $18.99 on the Switch and Steam. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I will say I actually did I did my homework and read a Steam review that says that it also has frame rate problems. So I think they're just having some problems. Yeah. So okay, $18.99 again. I think this is a really great game that I wish I could have played or seen. If that sounds like something you're willing to like invest in at this point, I would say, yeah, go ahead. This is a charming adventure that I think you'll find a lot to do with. I didn't even really touch on like the crafting and time traveling, but that's okay, because, you know, it'll be a while before you get to that anyway. especially at this frame rate. But everyone else, it's a try it. For folks who are like, I need my games to be, you know, feel like they're finished, then yeah, it's gonna be a deny it on that one. So I'm hoping that the developer maybe drops a patch or two to help fix some of these issues. They seem to be well documented. Again, I read other reviews to make sure my experience wasn't unique. And again, great game. I just noticed even the icon on my Switch screen, the character is like the size of like the bottom part of the E in Shell, just like a tiny ant character. So yeah, I'm like, maybe this is a style choice and I should just not talk about it, but yeah. Anyway, yeah, well, there you go.
All right, well, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is Loud, developed by Hyperstrange, published by Cubic Games, released July 15th on the Switch for $11.99. This is the story about Astrid, a teenage girl who's not fond of this whole growing up thing. We've all been there to help take her mind off the mundane. She occupies her free time with her greatest love, music. Pernell, what's going on in Loud?
So Loud is a music game, which has a light narrative playing behind it. The game takes place over a series of, I guess you could call them sort of acts, in the form of a tack board where the main character places photos that each represent a new chapter as you unlock it. And when you unlock, each one of those photos can represent either one of two things, either a narrative beat where the main character kind of talks about her life and things that are going on in it, and her feelings in regards to such things, or an actual music stage. And when you actually take on a music stage, the gameplay is done in the form of a sort of circle where the main character exists within the center of it, and on the outside of the circle, there lie six stars in the positions of, if you were to look at your Nintendo Switch controller, the stars lie in the positions representative of up, left, down, and X, A, and B. As the game progresses and the music begins to play, stars will move in from the outside of the screen to the inside of the screen. And once they reach the center area, basically the main circular area surrounding the main character, you have to press that star. You have to press the button corresponding to where the star is coming in from. So if it's coming in from the upper left, you have to hit up, for example. If it's coming in from the lower right, you got to hit B. And you are pretty much doing that.
Basically, what it looks like to me is it looks like a DJ Max or a Musenix or something like that just flipped on the side where the notes are coming in sideways instead of from the top or coming towards you.
Pretty much. But the interesting thing about this, which I came to notice as I was playing it, is due to the way the notes come in, it actually kind of changed how I perceive, you know, reading in advance to plan my movements. Because typically when you play music games, majority of them anyway, not all of them, but the vast majority of them, those are all coming in from one direction going to another place, the same place. So all coming from the top to the bottom, or from the bottom to the top, or all from the left to the right. But in this game, it's coming from all sides, like the left side of the screen and the right side of the screen. And if you're playing on handheld, which in my opinion, you should be playing it on handheld mode, you are kind of using that thing where your eyes are trying to stare at the screen. But since you're focusing, it's hard to focus on both the outside left and the outside right at the same time. So some songs, when they want to make them hard, they will actually definitely mess around with you by like, okay, coming from the left, but now the bottom right, now the upper left, and now the lower left. And you're like, we're going to keep up with all that. Now, of course, someone might be listening to this and going, well, doofus, why don't you just look at the center and just focus on that? Yeah, you could do that, but typically with music games on high difficulty, you kind of want to read in advance. Like, you want to kind of play in your movements in the order of what you're going to be hitting the buttons. Again, when I describe all this, you might be thinking, Pernelson, like, he hates this game. No, quite the contrary. I think the game's great. I'm just noting that to me, is something that I feel makes it a bit different, despite the fact that at its core, it is literally hit buttons to beat of song, which is fine, because that's the thing. So as you beat levels, as you enter music levels, you have access to two difficulties, basically an easy and a medium. But if you beat the medium difficulty, I'm not sure if you got to get a decent rating to do this or just beat the song, because this is me playing music games. But whenever I beat a level, I unlocked the hard difficulty for that song. And for me, that was when the game really was like, yep, this is where they're going to make you really work for those S ranks or whatever. So I actually kind of enjoyed that. As you also progress through the game, you'll kind of unlock little cosmetic changes that kind of progress with the story as it goes. For example, beginning of the game, you just kind of have your I'm at home hanging out outfit and like your broom, because you kind of fantasize playing a guitar, so you're playing a fake guitar. And then later on, when you get an electric guitar, you can use that guitar. And when you start busking, you can get the busking outfit that she wears at the train station, and so on and so forth. And you can just kind of choose your costumes. It doesn't do anything for the game aside from just give you a nice little look. But customization is customization, right? Now, the only downsides I have to this game really are the fact that the game itself is fairly short. There's only about 15 or so songs in the game. But at the same time, it's also kind of a budget price. And one thing I found kind of funny is that I went and looked at some other dialogues where people would claim, I think they disliked about this game is that the music wasn't quote unquote memorable. I don't know why they say that. Well, I kind of do, but there's a reason behind me what I'm about to say. In that, whereas they claimed that they disliked the game because they thought that the music wasn't so memorable, I appreciated it because the music reminded me of, like, say, the early era of Bimani games, which I loved, which was before they had this need for licensed music to prop it up on a stage and these known titles and tracks, when it was just a track that you had no understanding because it didn't exist outside of that game because it was composed for that game and you played it. And not all tracks had music. I mean, it had lyrics. This game gives me that exact same vibe. Every track she plays pretty much does not have lyrics. It's like her just jamming out. and whoever decided, whoever was the person who pretty much played the music in real time to put it in the game, I personally think did a great job. I was humming along to or tapping my foot to a number of the songs in the game. Am I going to go out of my way and likely remember it tomorrow outside of the game? Not necessarily, but I don't need to. I'm playing the game to tap my foot to it now, and that's what it's doing. It's doing its job. I don't have to remember it in my car or at work when I'm not playing it. That's I just fair. Need to like it while I'm playing it, and it's good. It's good music. So for me, I feel as though the game ended up proving to be a good time. Also worth noting, I did not test it on the TV because to me, the game system has a handheld mode, which means by being in handheld mode, I don't have to think about messing with the calibration settings or any of that nonsense. I can just play the game while it's connected to the Switch, with the Joy-Cons connected to the Switch, and the rhythm is pretty one-to-one. I didn't have any issues with calibration or notes being even remotely off, and I was happy with that. I was S-ranking damn near all the songs on the middle on the middle difficulty, so I was happy with it.
Nice. Well, the game is sitting at $11.99. What are your thoughts?
I give it a genuine buy. It's a great time, and I also forgot to note, but it's just worth mentioning, in addition to normal notes, you do have hold notes and match notes, so it's not just tap all the time. Sometimes you have to like kind of change a little bit how you do things, so it's a good time. I love the game. I think for the amount that they're charging, and if, again, as always with any of these reviews, if you're like, that's too much for 15 songs, get it on sale then, shoot. But the point is, I think they give you a decent number of good songs, and the time, while short, is also quite sweet. It's a good time. Go ahead and buy it.
Nice. All right, next up is The Tale of Bistun, developed by Black Cube Games, published by Black Cube Games and Imagine.pro. Released July 13th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $17.99. The Tale of Bistun is a story-driven action-adventure game inspired by the famous Persian tragic romance Khosrow and a stone carver with no memory of who he is. There you go. A stone carver with no memory of who he is must traverse blighted lands to discover his identity and the source of a pleading, strangely familiar whisper. Chris and Aki, you both played this one. Who wants to start?
I guess I will. Okay. Sure. You play as, I forgot his name already.
Farhad,
thank you.
I had to look it up.
Yeah. And you wake up in the middle of a forest clearing, not remembering who you are, including your name, which is why I didn't remember it. at least that's the story I'm sticking to.
And it turns out he's on a space station.
And you just, you know, follow your path until you find this big red stone. And then he decides in his infinite wisdom he wants to rub himself all over it. And poof, he's in another realm. And there he meets a talking tree. And now you understand basically the sense that this game makes.
Chris, how about you try? What's going on in this?
That sucked. Why don't you try it? No, just kidding.
I don't think you could do much better at this point, telling what the story is.
I'm very confused.
Okay, so you're Farhad. You don't know this yet when you wake up, but yes, once you when you end up in this other realm, it's like everything goes from being like an actual, you know, kind of dusty, mountainy, sort of foresty place to like just straight up Pink Floyd laser magic. And as you're going through this area, and then you end up meeting up with this tree, and this tree is basically telling you, you know, that you have to you basically have to like save other trees, pomegranate trees specifically, from certain destruction. And they are being held up in these big purple gems, and with your stone carving axes, I don't know how that works. I don't think you can carve axe with a stone, but carve stone with an axe. But anyway, you get your two hatchets and go to town on some, you know, little goblins and stuff. And every time you defeat an enemy, it causes the crystal to break apart, and eventually it breaks apart. You save the tree. You save the tree, and then you make your way back towards, like, this kind of hub area where, you know, where...
Where you talk to the tree again.
Beardy Tree is there, yeah. He tells you more story, and the whole time the game is being narrated in the third person by somebody else. Like, they're telling you a story. And basically, it just... It goes through this cycle of, like, you know, fighting enemies, going to the hub, going to outer space Pink Floyd laser show, and then, you know, finding... Papa Tree, let's call him, because he's got his big beard there, and then he like tells you, and then as it goes on, Farhad kind of remembers Papa more and more things. Yeah, he eats a pomegranate, and then like yeah, after that, kind of remembers a little bit more. He remembers he's after this lady called Shireen, and yeah, and the story kind of unfolds like that. It's kind of a walking simulator of a game because the combat is so like. Just beat up some guys. There's no levels. There's no currency. There's no, like, anything like that. If you die, you just, you know, go to a checkpoint and keep going. But
you do get new weapons later. Cool.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, like, there is some sense of, like, of going forward in the game. But, I mean, ultimately, the game's pretty short, so...
Yeah, very simple, you know. Too.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. So, what I found interesting about this game is that it... You know, I found out because I was like, this story seems pretty well written. I feel like this may be an existing story. And I looked it up, and sure enough, it actually is based on a 12th century Iranian poem. This game actually pays really careful attention to a Persian cultural thing that I actually was not very aware of until I kind of read about it. So turns out this is actually like a story that I don't know where, if the Pink Floyd laser show, like, you know, Dimension X appears in the 12th century poem, but if it does, then badass.
Yeah, I tried to look up to see if this was actually based on an actual story, and I couldn't find anything specific other than, you know, the story of the king and queen.
Yeah,
which doesn't. I couldn't find anything that had to do with anything else in this story, so it's like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, even contained within itself, it's like, it's weird, but it does make a kind of sense. And, you know, just the fact that it does kind of move on rails, I mean, you know, you really don't have much to explore. Like, you can pick up some items off the beaten path, like extra little tidbits to read and stone carvings to uncover, which apparently are
achievements related to that.
There are achievements, yep. And, yeah, ultimately, you know, it you're kind of moving along like a story, you know, that's going to take you less than a day to finish. So that's kind of what it is.
And then you fight an end boss, and there's suddenly a difficulty curve.
Yes. But, you know, I don't want to go too much into that, because otherwise you won't need to play the game.
Aki has to describe literally everything in a game. But
that's fine.
This one's going for $17.99. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, that's a bit steep something that is this short. But I mean, you know, like, some things are charming enough that I think they can become worth it. Like, I found Faerun on the 3DS a long time ago is a good example. It's a game that took me like 3 hours to beat with a really difficult final boss, and nothing else about the game was difficult, but I liked it so much that I bought it like two other times since then. So this game might be that for some people. It certainly looks good. It is like, it's an authentic experience by a developer who is of the culture they're speaking of, which I always support. I think that it's great to support something like this. I also think $18 is a little high for a game like this short.
Aki, your thoughts?
I'm for it, but I really like games that focus on other cultures and their mythos, especially if I, for once, actually don't know anything about it. So I'm for it. I liked it.
Nice.
So it sounds like a good recommendation. Try it for most people, but possibly wait for a sale.
Yeah, I would go with that. Yeah.
Cool. All right, next up is Witch Strandings, developed by Strange Scaffold, published by Modern Wolf, released July 7th on Steam for $14.99. You are a point of light in a new open-world strand-type game. Create pathways through the darkness, nurture the creatures of the forest, repair ancient structures, and ultimately confront the witch who broke this place. Purnell, what is going on in Witch Strandings?
What's going on with me in Witch Strandings is this is the game that officially made me come to learn that there is a genre of strand likes now because we can't come up with actual terms. Well, at least for this, I feel like there is an actual definition that you can give, an actual descriptor that exists, and that is called pick up and deliver. This is a pick up and deliver game, which actually I feel like Death Stranding was too, with the exception of the whole highway creation.
Death Stranding. Okay, I didn't know what the hell that meant. Strand type game. I didn't know that was like a genre now.
Neither did I till this game came along and told me so, or people were trying to make it a genre. I'm not sure.
Does it deserve to be a genre, though, is what we really need to know.
Well, I think we all know the answer to that question, but I don't want to go into that because you'll learn it from the review as I talk about it. So the idea behind this game is that you are, as Joe said, a speck of light who is plopped down into a mystical forest. And the game kind of gives you a little bit of a gist of like what's going on. And Joe kind of described that too. And then you are tasked with exploring it. Because after, aside from a short tutorial explaining the game's controls, you are just kind of left to your own devices. There is a day and night cycle, but there's no like visual indication of it aside from a clock in the lower right corner that ticks and shows you. But every day, well, I'll get to what every day does in a bit, because I got to describe the other elements of the game first. But you're in this forest, and you're just a speck of light. You move around by dragging your mouse. My advice to you off the bat, do not get a mouse that does not have a trackball, because I can't fathom having played this game with a traditional mouse. You have to move the mouse for every inch of movement in the game. I'm not saying that as a slight, just letting you know how it is. As you move around this map, dragging the light source, depending on the type of tile or terrain you move across will determine how your movement is affected too. For example, if you land in quicksand, you have to move the mouse slowly to get across, because as you know from quicksand, and if you don't, watch more 80s cartoons, but the more you move in the quicksand, the quicker you will sink. So move slowly through it. Some tiles you kind of have to dash into them, so it kind of throws you along like a slip and slide. But if you stay in those tiles too long, you will die. There are also other tiles that will kill you by staying in them for too long. And there's just a variety of different tile types. As you explore, you'll also come across three specific types of things. One, animals. These are the animals that inhabit the forest. If you come across them, they will typically have a little name for themselves and a descriptive, followed by what's ailing them. Maybe it's sick, or hungry, or tired, or delirious. It's delusional. And a few other things like that. The second type of item you'll come across is an actual item. These items typically are able to cure two things that could be afflicting one of the animals. So, for example, a berry can heal thirst and hunger. And I'm not going to the other one, because, again, they are all just things that can cure two things. And lastly, ruins. Ruins are objects that need to be repaired. And you can repair them by dragging a special object over to them. And by repairing it, over time, you can unlock, I guess, like fast travel points throughout the map. Now, the goal of the game is to find the animals, determine what they are, what's ailing them, find the item that will fix the ailment, and take it over to them. That's the game. Now, you can only carry, at least initially, one item at a time. So you might find yourself in a number of predicaments, because like I also mentioned about the items that can be used to heal characters, there are also items that will allow you safe passage across some of the negative tiles. So you'll find the item, walk over to the negative tiles, place it down, and then boom, it'll purify a certain area around the item that you picked up. So sometimes you'll need to carry around the item that can, you know, give you safe passage. Other times you have to carry around the item that you need to give to the animal. Sometimes you have to juggle between the two in order to get to its proper destination. The more animals you help, the more you fill up a tree in the lower left corner, and eventually that will lead you closer and closer towards being able to eventually take care of the witch. I won't say how or why, because you got to have something to discover in the game, but that'll eventually lead you towards the ability to purify and help the witch. It's interesting how this game plays because you pretty much go about the process of doing what I just described over and over again. And it's weird because the first time I played the game, I flat out said, this is stupid. Why am I doing this? And I turned it off. I'm reviewing it.
I was going to say, like, my question is the game easy to understand? Because I'm looking at screenshots and I don't know what the hell I'm looking at.
Trust me, I'll get to that too. Well, I guess I should get to it now because you're asking directly. The tutorial makes it pretty straightforward as to what you're supposed to be doing, at least for the concept of the game. As far as the game's world goes, though, you can be as vested or as uninvested as you want, because aside from the basic introduction, narrative comes in the form of actually reading the dialogue from the animals or occasionally coming across a scroll-like object on the ground when you're in a specific region and clicking on it to see, you know, it gives you some details of, like, this is what this object was in the world, or this is how this area in the landscape came to be, things like that. So the game is, at its core, easy to understand. The thing about it, though, is, like I was saying before, like, when I started playing it, I thought I wasn't interested. I came back because I had to actually review the game, and then something strange happened. I played through the entire game in one sitting. I just kept delivering items to animals. And it's interesting because initially, like I said, you can only carry one item, and that can be a bit of a pain in the ass because you'll see an animal who's sick. You're like, okay, I need an item that will heal a sick animal. Where the hell is the item to heal a sick animal? It's somewhere else on the map. So you got to find it. And then when you find it, you forgot where the sick animal was. You got to figure all that out. And therein lies the pick up and deliver aspect at its core anyway. That's for board games, video games, whatever games. Is knowing what you need to give to the guy, where to get it, and then to take it to them with the most optimal route. And somehow that became addictive. I just kept doing it over and over and over again. And each day, the animals might move, their needs change, and you do it all over again, just filling up this tree until the game is over. And when I finished the game, I came away saying, clearly I was engaged because I played the entire game. But did I have fun or did I just get absorbed? I think we've had this dialogue on the show in the past, but games that can just keep you doing an action, but you're not necessarily sure you had fun doing it. And that's where I'm at with this. Like, it felt more like an experience than a game. One other thing I should mention about this, I got to mention this real quick, but one other thing worth mentioning about what leads to it being more of an experience is the fact that I played the game with headphones on, not using my speakers. And whoever was in charge of the sound design for this game did a really good job. Because as you move around this map that is really just a bunch of squares with different colored and like shaped tiles, you get a lot of really nice music and sounds. You go around and you go across the flooded bin, you hear water dripping, like those ASMR videos, like just water's running down something or dripping onto something. And it sounds really nice in your ears. The music changes in different areas. Every time you come up closer to a hex tile, it kind of has this distortion sound that, you know, don't go near that. That's bad. It just, the sound does a spectacular job. Whoever did that, regardless of any take anyone could have on this game, that person deserves cool freaking dose. Now, what were you about to say?
I was going to say something that makes the game stand out is the developer, Strange Scaffold. People might recognize the name as they're the developer behind An Airport for Aliens Currently Run by Dogs and Space Warlord Organ Trading Simulator.
Oh, those names are freaking amazing.
So they, you know, we overuse the word unique on this show, but this is unique. Definitely a developer who makes unique and distinct products. And it sounds like Witch Strandings is another standout and interesting experience.
If you want to avoid the U word, then you could always say purposely eccentric.
But then that's going to become our new one. It's purposely eccentric.
Purposely eccentric. Purposely
I
eccentric.
Promise reviewers are just you going straight to the U word for this one.
Well, for now, it's $15. What are your thoughts?
And this is where it gets a little dicey to me, because I would never say deny to this, because just as I just described, to me, this game is more of an experience than a, oh man, it's so much fun or whatever. It's the sort of game that you just kind of play to get a vibe for what these guys put together. And just, even if it doesn't click for you, there's just something to be said about, I played this game and got to experience it, because there's not much really out there like it, if at all, really, despite the fact that I described it as being a pick-up and deliver game. So I want to give it a very high end to try it, because it is the sort of thing where, like, I do believe people should try this game. And if you come away going, what the beep did I just play? Well, guess what? You experienced it, and that was your takeaway.
Did you just say, what the beep?
Hey, I don't know what's happening to me.
Did you forget what show you're on?
Sometimes it happens.
Fuck, fuckity, yeah. fuck.
Last week on Rhythm of Pixels, I actually swore and had to bleep it there. So I was like, crap, I'm getting my shows crossed. What is happening to me? So I just thought that was pretty funny. I was like, whoop.
We're corrupting Purnell.
No, it's getting reversed. I don't swear here, but I swear there. Something's wrong. I got to get back in the fly portal. But it's definitely a high-end try. I would like more people to try this game. And again, as it states, if you're like $15 for a game I don't even know if I'm going to like, Steam has sales. Get it whenever it's comfortable for your wallet. I'm just saying, try the game. It's an interesting release.
All right. Next up is Harlow, developed and published by Rogue Games, released July 7th on the Switch for $12.99. You're light years off course, low on power, and have one critical goal: throw an epic surprise party so the colonists don't freak out when they defrost. Harlow is an atmospheric 2D platformer where you'll use physics to evade the dangers of an ancient planet, gather materials, and plan a party in space. Chris, what's going on in Harlow?
Okay, so Harlow, I had trepidations about this one because I was like, oh, it's another, you know, precision platformer. It even looks kind of like a silhouette platformer. I was like, I'm not going to have, yeah, I don't know about this. But this game definitely won me over in terms of, like, this kind of genre. So yes, you play as Harlow, who is a, I don't know, like a scout bot kind of dealio. He's on a robotically manned spaceship where some people are in hypersleep for the, you know, thousand year journey that they're doing or whatever. But the ship accidentally goes off course and, they're low on power, so they can't get back on course. They got to wake these people up, and they're near a planet, and they're like, we might have to get these people to move to this planet, you know, so that they survive. Why don't you, Scoutbot, Harlow, go check it out and make sure that the planet is hospitable. And so you go onto the planet, and each stage is exploring a different little part of the planet. Clearly, the planet has already been populated at one point, because you find structures, all kinds of hazards, seemingly some that make the planet seem fairly inhospitable, like, you know, acid and lava and whatever. But as you explore more and more of the planet, you collect mystery information, is what it's called. But they're just little dots on the screen. They're, you know, they're collectibles. And with these collectibles, there's this whole other thing where basically they're like, well, maybe if we throw a party for these humans when they wake up, they won't deactivate us out of anger. And so there's another side of this game where you are picking up these collectibles so that you can unlock and then furnish a welcome home party for these people who are about to be on the completely wrong side of the galaxy from where they wanted to be, in order to, you know, kind of quell the inevitable rage. And so it's kind of got this great cycle of, like, going through using your bouncy physics, which I'll get to in a second, to get through the stage. And then, you know, getting as many collectibles as you can so that you can decorate this party area and have, like, the coolest party. And I really, really love that they threw a party aspect in there because, you know, like, doing the whole thing of, like, you know, getting 3 stars instead of 2 stars, or getting like 100% instead of 90%. Like, those aren't as motivating to me as, like, actually being able to spend points on something, even if it's something useless like this. So, like,
it affects the ending. It's not completely useless.
No. But, I mean, it doesn't affect the gameplay. It's not, like, upgrading your robot or whatever. So that's what I like, though, is I like that they've done this, because it's like they added this the secret extra dimension that would make a game like this really fun. However, the game itself is actually fun.
You just reminded me of something real quick that you might appreciate, because you've been all about the retro stuff, too. Did you ever play Mischief Makers back in the day on the 64?
I have Mischief Makers. I haven't played very much of it, but I think I know where you're going with that.
Oh, the gold gems?
Yeah.
Yeah, what you just described sounds a lot like that to me, which sounds cool.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's like, it's breaking up the action with, like, you know, something that you can kind of, you know, work on that's just for fun. Or, and again, like, if you do the best job at it, then you'll affect the ending, which is really great. But yeah, like, actually going into the stages, so there's 4 chapters... And each are divided up into 10 stages, so presumably there's 40 stages. I didn't get to the end, so I don't know that there's more than that. And the way it goes is that you get dropped onto this planet. It's almost a silhouette platformer, because you don't see a whole lot of details. But it's mostly just because they figured out a way to kind of present it like this. The sun is kind of shining behind the scenery, so it kind of has that thing when you're looking at something that a light is shining behind it, you know, creates a somewhat silhouette, and that's kind of how they treated it. In fact, they treat lighting very seriously in this game. It's actually quite good looking. You know, so kudos to them for you know, effectively creating a silhouette platformer, but using lighting effectively to, like, not make it so obvious. And yeah, your ball, basically you get to choose a trajectory on the fly with the stick, and then you get to bounce your ball guy twice. So he basically has a double jump. You can, you know, bounce him in one direction and then jump in the opposite direction to do a kind of zigzag, which you will have to do in order to get certain through certain obstacles. You can also do, like, you know, a fast jump forward and then a slow jump up in order to, you know, kind of master the timing of, like, you know, pouring lava or something like that. All kinds of things to do. Usually you have to solve puzzles as well. A really common one is taking a keystone, which is just like this boulder looking thing that has a key symbol in it, and kind of pushing it towards, you know, basically the proximity of a locked door, or just a place where it needs to go in order to unlock, like, a gate to get through the rest of the level. They're fairly generous with checkpoints. There's also 3 main collectibles that you can get through the stages, and also the little tiny ones that, you know, you use to purchase party supplies. And then, yeah, once you do that, you get taken back to the ship. If it's been a new stage, then you get new dialogue from the hub, like, central computer, I guess is what it would be called, whose name escapes me, and I had it pulled up. Oh, well, it doesn't really matter. I want to say it's like Magnifico or something, but it's not.
Manifesto.
Manifesto, thank you. And then there's also the captain of the party planning committee that you don't really interact with as much, except that he asks you if you can find him a job where all he has to do is eat pizza.
That so sounds just, like a know. Good job.
I could do that job. I would love that job. I want that job so bad.
Yeah, let's get it. Let's do it.
Well, instead, we're stuck doing this shit. So $12.99 for Harlow. What do you think?
This is going to be my first confident buy it of the night. This game very much went above and beyond my expectations for this kind of genre. Usually this kind of thing is like where you'd pick it up and kind of, you know, challenge yourself a little bit, you know, mostly waste time or just do something over and over again for, you know, just to see if you can get to the end. But this one, this feels a little bit more meaningful, a little bit better set up, and you know, I like, oh, also I like that it has a few little, like, things to make it easier or just more, like, accessible, such as you can slow down the gameplay while you're aiming, So, like, if, you know, the game will move at regular speed, but once you're aiming, it actually kind of slows down. So you can really kind of, like, do your timing a lot better. You can also do inverted aiming, which means that instead of pointing at where you want to kick your ball, it's more like a slingshot. So you, like, pull back on your ball and then release it. So it works for both kinds of fans of that sort of physics. It's really well done, and I think that this is definitely worth checking out. So yeah, go get this one.
Cool. All right, next up is True Fear Forsaken Souls Part 2, developed by Goblins.com, published by the Digital Lounge, released June 6th on Xbox One for $9.99. True Fear Forsaken Souls Part 2 is the sequel to one of the most captivating escape games, which won acclaim for its story and mysterious horror atmosphere. We've built on our experience making a story-rich, mystery-filled horror escape game to craft a better and significantly longer adventure sequel. Aki, how did they do?
Fantastically. In this, you pick up playing the same character immediately after the events of the first game. But so before
to get this out of the way, you should probably play the first game before this one.
Oh yeah, it's this and the prior one and the upcoming one are part of a trilogy that tells an entire story in order. So yeah, you definitely need to play the first one to really understand what's going on. They do thankfully have a little what happened last time video that you can watch right from the main menu if you really just want to jump into this and say fuck it to the first one. I don't really understand why you'd want to do that, but there are people who've played Mass Effect 2 instead of Mass Effect 1 and then 2, so what the hell do I know?
I did that. I couldn't get into the first Mass Effect.
What's wrong with you
people? I just told you I couldn't get into the first Mass Effect. You
they made a lot of improvements on the sequel, though, so I can get that.
You people all hurt my damn soul.
And you know, when Mass Effect 2 came out, Mass Effect 1 didn't exist on the PlayStation, so they had to have a little story wrap-up thing.
Okay, that's fair for PlayStation.
So anyway,
you know, you can't use that excuse.
Anyways, so in this, you start at the asylum that you were heading to at the end of the first game. Spoilers. Can't really help spoiling the first game at this point, because that's how you get to the second one.
True.
But this happens after the events of the first game, but part of it is before the events of the bonus bit of the game, of the first game, and after the bonus bits of the first game. And basically, you're locked out of the asylum first, and you have to find your way in, and then you have to work your way through getting different doors and the like open so you can figure out what the hell happened to your sister who was staying there that you didn't know about. Again, spoiler for first game, can't really bypass that. So, yeah. So, you know, this, again, for some reason, all these games, I don't know who their fucking contractor is, but I really want them because I would love for my house to be a Resident Evil styled. You can't open
you
this
would
door.
Want your house to look that way.
Dude, that would be awesome.
Anyone on this show, I could imagine you would be the one that's like, oh, yeah, you want to go to the bathroom? You're going to have to go down the hall to the left, fight the alligator in the biotech basement, find the chalice that's waiting in the chest around the corner, bring that to the door, put that in, solve a puzzle, and then the toilet paper. Oh, fuck, I'm going to have to write. Do you have a pen? Write this
down. Yeah,
it's on the gator. I'm just going to tell you that right now. I'm pissing on the gator. I ain't got time for all that.
Yeah, I would totally love a Resident Evil style house. 100%. Especially if I had a mansion. Oh, fuck yeah. I would make the Resident Evil 1 mansion. Apparently those contractors were here and built this fucking hospital too. So there's that. You find out more about your family's friend, the neighbors from your old house that for some reason suddenly your family stopped interacting with one day out of the blue for no fucking reason. You start to learn why. And you're like, oh, okay. And I'm not telling you what that is, because that's part of this one story.
Yay!
So, yay!
You're not giving away stuff.
It's a miracle.
What's the gameplay like? What do you do in the game?
It's another hidden object puzzle styled game. You walk around, you collect things, and then sometimes they have hidden object puzzles. And again, you can choose whether it's the list version where you have to find all 500 of these items on the screen, or you know, you just put two items together to open another item, to get a piece to open another section of the item and finish it through a little adventure like that, which is so much faster and easier to do. I always suggest that. Otherwise, yeah, other than that, it's just moving from room to room, picking things up, figuring out what they're used for, like a point and click. So it's a pretty simple game. The puzzles
in this, better and longer than the first game, as they claim in their description?
It is definitely longer. I think the video graphics, which you don't have very many of, but I think they're better in this one. Otherwise, it's about the same gameplay-wise, because, you know, a hidden object game is not... There hasn't really been an update to that genre in how long has the genre existed, basically. Yeah, so, you know, it's the graphics for things have gotten better. And I think some of the writing's gotten a little better, because I'm never going to forget the very opening, one of the very opening cinematics of the game, where she's like, where she's talking about how she hasn't seen her sister, but it's worded in a way that no one who speaks English would ever say it that way, because it just sounds really off. I don't remember what she said anymore, though, sadly, so I guess I will forget to a helpful degree. Yep. I would look it up, but right now I'm in another game, so.
Yay. Well, this one is $10. What do you think of it?
I think it's totally worth it. You're definitely getting your money's worth through hours and through content. I think it's really well done, and I can't wait for the third one.
Cool, and hopefully we could check that one out when it's ready to go.
Yep.
All right, one final game to discuss tonight is called Formula Bit Racing DX, developed by Josep Monzonis Hernandez, published by Two Awesome Partners, released July 8th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $4.99, featuring the fast and exciting gameplay that the genre is known for. Formula Bit Racing DX captures the essence of the old school racing games with crisp, low-poly visuals, retro soundtrack, and high-speed action. Start your engines and prepare for the craziest and most addictive racing game ever. Fast-paced racing game with a fresh interpretation of the old-school racing games. Purnell, what's going on in Formula Bit Racing DX?
I'm sorry. I had to say, I was like, wow, that's a whole lot of words. I didn't
hear that at all.
Oh, I said none of that.
No.
So Formula Bit Racing DX on the surface was pretty much up my alley. I'm a big sucker for voxel graphics. I like, you know, retro racing games, you know, all the shebang, you know, sign me up. And I played it. The idea behind the game is that you are racing a Formula One car around a series of voxel racetracks, 20 to be exact. There's four different, you know, course are classes: novice, junior, senior, and master. And amongst those, there's five different races. They reference countries, but there's really no indication that you're racing any particular place. It's just a name to give a track. And once you choose a track, you can choose the difficulty, whether it be normal or hard, and then you choose the car you want to race with. All the cars look the same, with the exception being they have different colors, and they have statistics related to them in the form of speed, boost, turning, and drift. But once you choose the car, it's time to race, and that's where the hiccup is. Ooh, boy. So, every race, your controls are as follows. You have acceleration, you have a brake button, and you have a boost button. Pretty straightforward, simple controls. Nothing wrong with that. However, if you were to ask a person what their least favorite element of a classic 80s top-down racing game was in the form of track design, chances are you're going to probably be told 90-degree turns, because they are the element of a racing game that kill your speed. You have to stop or slow down hardcore to make turn, you know, work. And that's the whole point of a 90-degree turn. They force you to brake and adjust your turns, right? But the smooth curves and all that, they're fantastic. You know, lead into those, kind of cut people off on them and such, overtake them. But this game, in its entirety, is straightaways and 90-degree turns. That's the entire game. There aren't even any track hazards. So there's nothing like, you know, oil slicks, like, you know, super off-road type stuff. Nothing that would make the tracks themselves stand out. It is literally straightaways and the least liked type of turn in racing game existence. If you do a later course, let's say a senior series or something, what you going to do? More of those, more sharp turns. That's what they give you. Just well, more 90
I can understand
turns.
The 90 degree turns because it's a voxel world, so everything is square shaped and has corners.
I get that, but that doesn't make it fun, even if it maintains the theme. Like, true. It's, I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that might be hearing this and going, but I love 90 degree turns and everything. Like, well, hey, I think you just got your own answer to this review. But for me, I like a variety in my turns. I like to feel like the races have a uniqueness to them, aside from just how many 90-degree turns we put in the race. What was it you said, Chris, the alternative?
Purposely eccentric.
Purposely eccentric.
I like more to be to my games to make them purposefully eccentric than just 90-degree turns ad nauseum. Want to make the trace harder? More of them. Want to make it easier? Less of them. But what are you going to always have? Those. Like, oh, no. Come on, man. And I mean, and to go along with that further, there's also a lot of other retro racing games out there. Yet they're not voxel. Yeah, I get that. But there are a lot of other retro racing games on these consoles that do, I feel like, a more fun job of bringing me back to that era of racing games for a similar price point at that. And in the scope of things, like, I can't deny that. Like, I could see if I was like, no, I was having a bit of fun and enjoyment here and there. But in the end, I just couldn't. Like, I just was constantly telling myself, man, this could be so much better than this.
Mel, what would you do to fix it?
Well, for one, less 90-degree turns and more turn variety.
Based on the visual style, that I think that's out. Like, you can't change... Like, you could change your approach on how you're driving into the turns, but no, I think design-wise, I don't think round turns would make sense in this world.
Not that, but there is still a way around that. But the problem is the tracks are still very, like, narrowish, because if you want to get around that while maintaining, you know, rectangular shapes, you just make the actual course wider. So the track is actually, even though it's a 90-degree turn, it's a lot of track in that 90-degree turn. So you can kind of like cut around it, you know, because you have a lot of space to work with. And then you have more narrow 90-degree turns when you want to make it more difficult. So you get the best of both worlds there. You get your 90 degrees constantly because you want the squaring, but you have variety in the turns by making them wider or smaller or thinner, rather. The next thing. I guess this is subjective in my case. I guess it's also just it's a freaking game review. But the music could stand to get a little bit more punch. Like, I definitely hit a point quickly enough where I just kind of found myself shutting that down. But then lastly, though, this is even more minor, but just a thing. The courses have names like South Korea, Portugal, Finland, and whatnot. But, I mean, there is really nothing that makes these distinct. That makes them stand out for themselves. I was having a conversation about this with another game not too long ago about when the elements to the game lack a thing that make them unique and stand out, eccentric, stand out from each other. So the South Korea track has the exact same layout and decor to the T as, you know, this other track over here. If I were to go to, I don't know, probably Portugal or something. Any reason behind that? No, not really, because the names on the tracks are just there to be different, to make them different. But it'd be interesting if there was like some little elements there, even if it's just like a flag on the pole that just said, this is South Korea. I don't know. It's just, and it's a light thing. So I'm sure other racing games have done the same thing. I'm sure if you go to play Super Sprint uses, that's what we're like, Offer uses like actual like weird words like Fandango. But there, I know I have played other racing games that do that. But nonetheless, I'm talking about this one in that regard. And it'd be nice if there was something a little distinct between the tracks. And that's really all I would ask for. Because that was, for me, the thing that was killing me. Like, I there's a boost button, but I never want to boost. Like, yeah, there's a straightaway. Try to hit the brakes right here to hit that 90-degree turn. Like, it's just... It just wasn't clicking for me. I just couldn't do it. Couldn't get down with the formula bit.
Well, it's $5. What do you think?
And unfortunately, I'm going to have to go with denied on this Mamma Jamma. But, you know, again, if you're listening to this review and you're going, I have nothing against nothing but 90-degree turns that are fairly narrow, knock yourself out. If you're looking for an easy 1,000-bit achievement, knock yourself out, because you can get that here, too. It's just wasn't for me.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Deny.
Complain loudly.
Yay, grumble. That is it for this episode. Made it through another one. Chris Purnell, Aki, thank you for hanging out and being here. Thanks to Brooke and Tim for being here as well. Music, what should we play? How about some... I just got an email that the 1UPs are celebrating their 20th anniversary this year. How about we play some 1UPs?
If they have a Zelda track, play that in reference to your grumble comment.
Of course the 1UPs have done Zelda. Have you not heard of the 1UPs?
I listen to the 1UPs, but I don't assume, Joe. My memory's not the best. I'm ancient.
They have like eight albums.
I own some of them, remember?
You should own all of them.
They do got a lot of Zelda.
Yeah.
That one from... Intergalactic Continuum, I think. It's really good.
Cool, so we'll play that one.
There you go.
Prophylactic.
Final words for this episode. If anyone has interest in Lip Balm, we have done another run of Lip Balm. We have our special Wet Pancakes Lip Balm, as well as a special Wet Pancakes 2 Blueberry Boogaloo Lip Balm. If you are interested, hit me up. I will give you information on pricing and shipping. Shipping is the bitch. I'm sorry, I can't control it. It is what it is. But anyone have any final words to end the show?
They describe it as every curve. Okay. No, I have nothing.
Helpful.
grumble.
Mm-hmm.